I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne's website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises three reports from management and one item of general business. We've received no apologies. For the purpose of this meeting, the second Future Melbourne Committee meeting of the new Council team, I'm exercising my delegated power from Council to appoint councillors to chair committees. The Finance and Governance portfolio will be chaired by Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Wood, and the Planning portfolio will be chaired by Councillor Rees. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting minutes of open meeting number one, held on Tuesday the 15th of November? Deputy Lord Mayor, seconded Councillor Leppert. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. I ask councillors whether there are any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting. In that case, as at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, Planning Application for 109 to 111 Little Lonsdale Street, Melbourne, requests to speak from Bill Allen, Dr. Stan Capp, Pamela Lyons and Maureen Capp, and items of correspondence from Bill Allen, Dr. Stan Capp, Pamela Lyons and Maureen Capp. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Ministerial Referral 135 to 139 Sturt Street, Southbank, requests to speak from Christopher Puxty, Eileen Vamos, Christopher Putty, Sean Evans, Christina Arbuckle, Philip Arbuckle, and Tony Penner. And we've received over 50 items of correspondence in relation to this agenda item. In relation to agenda item 7.1, proposed travel by Councillor Cathy Oak to Mexico in December 2016 and the ICLEI board meeting in Germany in January, a request to speak from Chris Thrum and an item of correspondence from Chris. I just advise submitters that you're invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You have 3 minutes to address us. We adhere to that time limit. There's a counter on the wall behind us. Beeps sound at 2 minutes, and then again at the completion of your time at 3 minutes. In accordance with the Council resolution, the 26th of March 2013, we provide a 15-minute period at the start and the end of each meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration, and this is not the time to make submissions. Submitters are invited to address us at the time the agenda item is considered. Could I now invite questions from the public? Are there any questions? Thank you. In that case, I call on Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Wood to assume the role of the Chair in relation to the Finance and Governance portfolio.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's one report from management for consideration under the Finance and Governance Portfolio, Agenda Item 6.1, the 2016-17 first quarter September 2016 year-to-date financial performance report. And I'll call on Phu Nguyen, our CFO, to make a brief presentation.
Good evening, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors. The purpose of this report is to consider the financial performance of the Council for the first quarter ending 30th September 2016, and also to provide information on supplementary evaluations adopted by the CEO under delegation. As detailed in the report, you'll see that the Council produced an underlying surplus for the first quarter of $10.9 million. It is well positioned to deliver on its full-year budget. In terms of total revenue and expenditure variances, the major categories are as outlined in the report. But on the revenue side, we've seen higher open space developer contributions and higher parking fee revenue. That higher parking fee revenue has been partly offset by lower parking fine revenue. On the expenditure side, we are travelling below budget in terms of budgeted expenditure for the first quarter. However, I expect that as we deliver services and programs to the community over the remaining 9 months, that variance will diminish over time. Allowing for the timing differences, I expect that the full year result will be in line with the budget, which is underlying surplus of $12 million, and we're well on track to deliver that as a council. Thank you.
Thanks, Fu. Just on with regard to 6.2, are there any recommendations from officers on any items to be referred to audit at this stage?
There are no recommendations from management for items to be referred to the audit committee.
Any further questions for Fu at this stage? Fu, you can take a seat. So I'm happy to move a motion which deletes 6.2. I think deleting 6.2 is fine, just to accept the quarterly financial performance report, and I ask a councillor to second that motion. Councillor Rees, excellent. As you've heard from our CFO, we're tracking well. A few of those are from timing issues. Parking fees are up 1.387, parking fines are down about $1 million due to less infringements. Net assets have actually dipped below $4 billion due to cash expenditure on capital projects and some depreciation as well. $2.47 million favourable against budget due to open space contributions, which shows the development activity in the city at the moment. Councillor Rees.
I'd simply note that it's a very good set of numbers, Deputy Lord Mayor, and second the motion. A beautiful set of numbers, as a great treasurer once said.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Any other? Any allusion to federal government politics to remain there? Any other speakers too, Lord Mayor?
Thank you, Chair. The only point I would make is that the parking revenue is about where we thought it was when we introduced the electronic systems a number of years ago, that we wanted parking fines to fall because people were being compliant, and that would mean greater turnover of those spots, which is what our retailers require. So in policy settings, that seems to be on track, and overall there is not a great diminution in revenue. The one makes up for the other. So I think that in policy terms, that is working extremely well for us, as laid out in the first quarter report.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any speakers against this? Any other speakers too? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Rees to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the planning portfolio.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. There are two reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening, the first being Agenda Item 6.2, Planning Application TP 2016-537 for 109 to 111 Little Lonsdale Street, Melbourne.
Chair, I will declare a conflict of interest in this, as a partner of the owner was a donor to my campaign in 2012. So I'll absent myself from this discussion.
And I'll just declare the same conflict, Chair.
And I also declare the same conflict, Chair. I'd like to take
Councillor Louis.
Conflict of interest due to impact on residential amenity.
Okay. Councillor Watts.
Sadly, I too have to declare an indirect conflict of interest. A neighbour to this property was donated $500 and took part in my campaign.
Seek the advice of council officers at this point. I think we may be in court.
My name's Linda Weatherson, and I'm Acting Director, City Operations. Due to the number of councillors who have declared a conflict of interest in this matter, the required quorum for the meeting has been lost. This agenda item relating to 109 to 111 Little Lonsdale Street, Melbourne, will now be decided by me under delegation. I intend to determine the application in accordance with management's recommendation printed in the agenda.
If the meeting's in court, it cannot consider the matter.
I don't care what you do after that.
No, I'm sorry, that is not possible. But if you would like, it won't be a very long meeting,
I don't think. If you would like, my suggestion would be our procedures do allow you to wait until the end of the meeting and then ask us a question. It may not be a submission, so I'd invite you to think about doing that. It can't be greater than 90 seconds, but you can ask us a question at the end. But just be careful, because it can't be a submission. That's all I can offer you. I'm sorry.
Okay, moving on to agenda items.
There's a woman here who's going to make a decision, and she's heard nothing from people who, citizens, who came along tonight to present a view, a case, and then you're not hearing them. I understand that some of you have got conflicts of interest, but the woman who is going to make the decision according to the Ministry of Law has not heard them. That is not right.
I'm sorry, I just don't know what that means, the woman who's going to make the decision. Well, so is what we're doing, which is also called the law. You know, we have to abide by that. We don't have any choice, despite what we might like or not like to do. We have to abide by what the local government law tells us we have to do.
So the person who's been delegated to make the decision on this TP cannot say she would like to hear what citizens' expressions are.
Well, this is irregular, and I understand your anger. Can I make one point to you? Please don't feel that verbal submissions are the be-all and the end-all of the considerations of our officers. We have a number of written items of correspondence, in fact, from exactly the same people who are going to present to us tonight. Exactly the same people. And all of those are given due weight by the decision maker. And there is no limit on the amount of information that can be provided through items of correspondence. So to say the decision maker doesn't have that, I think, is gilding the lily a bit. Exactly the same people making a verbal submission as are making a written submission, and those written submissions are certainly considered. And if further people want to make written submissions to us in these circumstances, we accept it as well.
Now, there will be scope for questions at the end. I'm going to move on to agenda item 6.3 as Chair, and that refers to Ministerial Planning Referral TPM 2016-17 for 135 to 139 Sturt Street, Melbourne. Any conflicts on this? No. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item?
Brief one would be
helpful. I think it would be helpful. I call on Jane Birmingham, Practice Leader, Statutory Planning, to make a brief presentation.
Good evening, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. The application tonight is the site at 135 Sturt Street in Southbank. The rear half of the site is in a design and development overlay that has a mandatory 14 metre height control. The front half of the site to Sturt Street is in a design and development overlay that has a preferred or discretionary height of 40 metres. That just outlines the controls. Again, the key ones are the design and development overlays. The application has been referred to Council by the Minister, who ultimately is the decision maker. The Minister has received a total of 58 submissions from nearby residents in relation to this matter. However, the application is actually exempt from notice and review provisions of the scheme and the Act. This is just a brief photo of the site showing the existing two-storey commercial buildings. This is the proposed development. Essentially, what is proposed is a 20-storey or 63 metres to the roof tower. On the lower levels, it contains commercial uses, including food and drink premises, retail and office. And within the tower component, there's 240 dwellings. There's also three basement levels containing 199 cars, 177 bikes spaces and 5 motorcycle spaces. This is just another shot of the podium of the development, which is in the order of 24.5 metres. The required setbacks for this development, as specified in the design and development overlay, are 10 metres from the front and side boundaries and 30 metres from the rear boundaries. The front and rear setbacks are compliant with the scheme, but the side setbacks are in the order of about 5 metres. Again, this just outlines the scheme. Of note, in the 240 residential dwellings are 33 three-bedroom apartments. But I suppose the key matter for consideration is that the building proposes a height of around 65 metres in a 40-metre discretionary height control. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions from councillors of Jane Birmingham? Okay. Please resume your seat, Jane. Thank you very much for that. I now call on Christopher Puxty, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Good evening. As a resident of South Bank for over 16 years, I've watched the precinct grow from two towers that were part of an architecturally award-winning skyline to the ramshackle mishmash of concrete, glass and steel that is now. The high density of the proposed development and sheer volume of apartments is not in keeping with the other medium density buildings in the immediate area. It does not provide any significant amenity to the local residents, to the patrons of the arts, and to the students of the local colleges and schools. It is noted in the report to the Future Planning Committee that the building significantly exceeds the height limits and the discretionary 40-minute limit is still excessive within the precinct and obviously not in keeping with buildings in the immediate area, as we can see by the pictures. The Dodd Street and Well Street boundaries measure a total width of 30.3 metres. Without the discretionary powers allowed within the Melbourne planning scheme, the 10-metre setbacks required on all boundaries would leave only a 10-metre wide building envelope. This alone should indicate the size of the proposed development is not suitable for the site. The current streetscape of Dodd Street is tree-lined and unobtrusive. While the proposed development along Dodd Street is 14 metres, the mass of the construction and building cladding is not in keeping with the surrounding buildings and is more appropriate for the casino precinct. It does not reflect the arts heritage of Dodd Street or Sturt Street. The height of the Sturt Street podium frontage, whilst lower than required, is again not in keeping with the heritage values of buildings such as the Malthouse Brewery building and the contemporary elegance of the ACCA building. Both are iconic Melbourne buildings and run the risk of being overrun by a modern, out of place apartment complex. A reduction in the podium height would still detract from the Sturt Street streetscape. Overshadowing is serious concern to the local residents and arts patrons. The shadow plan indicated is limited to a particular day in September and October and does not reflect the reality of shadowing during midsummer or midwinter. During winter, when the sun passes further south, the shadow cast between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. would overlikely shadow the forecourt of the Malthouse Theatre. The shadow plan presented at 3 p.m. in the afternoon during the summer months from approximately 5 p.m. through to 9 p.m. will cast a shadow over the South Bank Royal Complex and the Victoria Barracks. Throughout spring, in the late afternoon, there is a possibility that the shadow will be cast across the Shrine of Remembrance. The expectation that owners of over 100 apartments will not require a car space or a bicycle is misguided and unrealistic. With 82 of the 199 car spots being in tandem, 41 in reality, the assumption is there will be allocated to all of the three-bedroom apartments, 8 of the two-bedroom apartments, to avoid the need to share tandem space amongst multiple apartments. This leaves the remaining 117 car parking spots to be allocated to the remaining 42 bedroom apartments, 143 one-bedroom apartments,
I'd ask you to conclude now,
and 33 studio apartments. 100 or more of these apartments will have off-street parking.
Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you.
I now call on Christina Arbuckle to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Good Good evening, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and the councillors. My name is Chris Arbuckle. I live in South Bank and I work within the City of Melbourne as a case manager, where I look after 25 aged and disabled people, and I'm now finding more and more of my clients are becoming ill with mental health. This leads me to open the discussion on the overshadowing and the blocking out of natural sunlight on the residents and the surrounding area. We all know that too much sun can cause skin cancer and melanoma, but the lack of sunlight can be far more damaging in many different ways. The lack of natural sunlight causes vitamin D deficiencies. Vitamin D deficiency is usually linked to poor bone health and can cause, along with other things, osteoporosis. But research has also linked vitamin D deficiencies with increased incidence of multiple sclerosis, which is more prevalent the further away from the equator than at the equator. So it's more likely people in Tassie will have, per population, could have multiple sclerosis than people in Queensland. Hence now, the overshadowing and the lack of vitamin D, is this mean that we're going to get more people in the City of Melbourne with multiple sclerosis? Vitamin D deficiencies in men can make them twice as likely to develop heart disease, and the risk of prostate cancer increases significantly. Vitamin D deficiencies in women increases the chance of developing breast cancer. Also, vitamin D deficiencies are likelihood in the memory to memory loss and dementia, mental health problems such as schizophrenia, clinical depression and anxiety. So the lack of natural sunlight can also impair children's eye conditions and development. So to say vitamin D isn't important, we really are kidding ourselves. Imagine being aged or disabled and having poor mobility. You're pretty much housebound. So looking at the view out of your lounge room window to a garden or to the city is very important to people. Some people just like to sit there and look at children play or swim or other residents playing tennis. If this is overshadowed, people won't be using the gardens and the gardens won't flourish. The overshadowing of this development too, it just is going to make it colder, people will go elsewhere. I also believe that this is one site, but if precedence is set here, there are two other sites that developers will look at which will entirely destroy the whole neighbourhood. It's low-lying. Lots of families live there, not students, not single people, it's all families. The overshadowing is a major contributor to our poor health and wellbeing.
Chris, I'd ask you to finish up now. Thank you very much. Okay, I now call on Philip Arbuckle, Chairman of the Sunday Apartments, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
I have put in two applications. Will I be able to speak as a private person later, or?
No, the council provisions are clear on that point, that you can only speak for 3 minutes. Okay.
The problem I have is I'm a little technically challenged, is the PowerPoint. Will that just roll through for everyone to see without me doing anything? Can that be done? Okay, that'd be great if you could. Thank you. Lord Mayor, councillors, committee and guests, thank you for coming. As chairperson of the Sunday Apartments in Coventry Street, South Bank, and a local resident of South Bank Village, our major opposing argument is the height of the proposed building. To quote the Melbourne planning scheme, Melbourne's character is defined by distinctive urban structure, historic street pattern, boulevards, parks, heritage and coffee. The conservation of identified heritage places from the impact of development is crucial. The Melbourne planning scheme states such objectives as to ensure medium-scale residential development in the South Bank Village and to protect low-scale residential development on the east side of Dodd Street. Sturt Street, area A4, restricted to 40 metres. Dodd Street, area 4B, restricted to a height of 14 metres. The proposed high-rise development is for a 21-storey, 67-metre tall building, which significantly is over these current restrictions. According to the scheme, any development along Sturt Street should, and I quote, maintain the existing street scale proportions. It does not. Provide a sense of openness, maintain access to expansive sky views and an intimate scale for pedestrians. A 21-storey building will not do that. Provide a complementary transitional scale to adjoining low-scale buildings. The high-rise will stick out like a sore thumb amongst the surrounding low-scale building, theatres and the arts precinct. Respect and complement the adjoining Victoria Barracks heritage buildings. It does not. It is noted that an application was submitted 30th of June 2015 for 42 storeys, 138 metres. Why? The Melbourne planning scheme also aims to protect iconic views in the city, namely the Dominance Arts Centre spire. You will note it is totally blocked out from the corner of Sturt Street and King's Way. Gone. Forever. Never to be returned. I'll cut it short because I'm running out. This area is similar to Greenwich Village in New York, right in the middle of Manhattan. Also, Paris. Very, very low range, no high rises. Imagine if a developer wanted to put a high rise that blocked out the Eiffel Tower. You are kidding me. Do you want to be the council that will, in time, be awarded for... I'm losing a little bit here, excuse me, but awarded for stopping this development, which is crazy, or preserving our heritage, and our grandchildren will not have anything to fix because it'll be there.
Thank you, Philip. I now call on Eileen Vamoff to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Good evening, I'm Eileen Vamos. I want to just briefly sketch how the residents came to know about this development. So it starts with our adorable looking dog as a wonderful magnet for attracting people. So as we walked together along Dodd Street one morning in July and residents stopped to chat to both of us, I asked them if they knew about plans to build a high rise in Dodd Street. They replied in disbelief. They had no idea. They told me they didn't want a high rise here. They had moved to South Bank Village to be in this charming setting and close to the arts precinct. Our family has lived in South Bank Village for 10 years for those same reasons. We were attracted to the quaint low-rise settings. We love the area's creative vibe, and it's a wonderful haven away from soaring glass apartment towers. After the first whispers about the proposed high-rise, I heard the residents had no right to know about such plans. I'm not an activist. In fact, I had been cocooned for almost 2 years in a peaceful and gentle space because of illness. I decided to step back into the world because I believed residents should know what was happening in their precious neighbourhood. So began the Save Dodd Street campaign. It started with 3 people and increased to many more, and culminated in a packed community meeting in October that attracted residents from 10 South Bank apartment buildings. The meeting highlighted 3 things. Firstly, the Melbourne Arts Precinct is truly valued. Secondly, residents cherish the unique setting of South Bank Village. And thirdly, a high-rise building belongs elsewhere. The Arts Precinct enjoys international recognition and is the setting for our finest creative companies. It is truly inspiring to walk past the Melbourne Recital Centre, the South Bank Theatre, the Victorian College of the Arts, and then wander past the Acker Gallery and the heritage buildings of the Malthouse. Next are the award-winning architects Hayball. They have been in Sturt Street for about 14 years. I admire their success, but not what they are proposing here. In the busyness of soaring to achieve, most people go through life on automatic pilot. They live in their head, consumed by the swirl of thoughts, deadlines, and decision-making. When you work from the head, you are not mindful or sensitive to what surrounds you, and your sense of curiosity dims because you know that along Dodd Street there are theatres and heritage buildings. However, when you journey from your head into your heart, you look at life in a totally different way. You take delight in the subtle changes occurring in familiar places. You really see and appreciate the charm of the Melbourne Arts Precinct and this unique South Bank pocket. Most of all, you know deep in your heart that a high rise here is unsuitable and also unacceptable. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. I now call on Christopher Putty to speak for no more than three. I was wondering that. Putty and Puxty. it was a typographical error. Okay, we'll move on to Sean Evans and call on Sean Evans and ask him to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. The proposed development is directly next to the 1892 constructed Cooper's Malthouse building, which is then situated next to the Australian Centre of Contemporary Art. These two buildings, like the majority of buildings in the broader arts precinct and surrounding apartment blocks, are low-rise developments, none of which are constructed in the style of the proposed development, whilst there is no development at all within 300 metres to the west. As such, the height, scale and design of the proposal, whether at 21, 20 or reduced to, say, 18 floors, will be out of character with the Arts Precinct and will detract from the Malthouse and ACCA buildings and surrounding apartments. No view of these two notable buildings from any direction will not be dominated by an overdevelopment of the direct neighbouring site. Page 18 of the report to the Future Melbourne Planning Committee demonstrates this. The Municipal Strategic Statement notes the buildings along Sturt Street maintain the visual dominance of the Arts Centre spire. Views of the Arts Centre spire will be diminished by an overdevelopment of the site. The State Government and City of Melbourne have and will no doubt continue to invest significant resources in establishing, maintaining and growing a world-renowned arts precinct. It would therefore appear counterproductive to detract from this long-term arts precinct vision with overdevelopment of neighbouring sites which are out of character and detract from the precinct. The Melbourne Arts Precinct Blueprint notes a lack of pedestrian amenities and a need to improve them, whilst the report to the Future Melbourne Planning Committee notes the through-block link as not being pedestrian-friendly, removal of trees and new and widened crossovers which disrupt pedestrian movement. This does not take into account pedestrian effects of increased traffic in the area and into the building's driveway, nor the change in amenity of walking along tree-lined streets around a tower. The development includes artist affordable housing, which is noted there is no instrument to enforce, whilst discussions with members of the arts community indicate that if this affordable housing were the most likely studios and one-bedroom apartments, they would be too small for an artist to practice their craft at home and therefore may not be desired. During the construction phase, the effect on noise, traffic, pedestrians, the arts precinct, the Malthouse and local business would all suffer. The Melbourne Arts Precinct Blueprint includes a desire for Sturt Street to become an arts spine, a destination in itself. With development to the west side of Sturt Street difficult because of the on and off links to CityLink, there are so few commercial spaces that have the potential to achieve this vision. Any proposed development should therefore complement the vision of South Bank as the arts and cultural centre of Victoria, not detract from it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. And finally, I now call on Tony Penner from the South Bank Residents Association and somebody very well known to many councillors to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Lord Mayor, councillors, Tony Penner. Well, where do I start? We've heard from everybody. I think with what has been covered, there's not a lot left for me to say. It's pretty clear. But first of all, I'd like to commend Eileen Vamos for all the effort that she's put into informing and bringing together the community to address this overdevelopment. South Bank Residents Association also believes this is a massive overdevelopment. We can't even comprehend how a developer or an architect with the credibility of Hayball could present something like this. More importantly, an architect that has lived in that area for as long as they have. The height is the major concern, of course. That is the overbearing part of this development. What astounds me, though, is that we've got a 67 metre development, which is 67% over the recommended height, yet our own council officers have made a recommendation to reduce it by 3 storeys or roughly 10 metres. In other words, they're saying that a 57 metre development would be acceptable. It's in the report. A three-story reduction would be recommended. Three-story reduction. I'm sure it's in there. I'm certain of that. What this area needs is activation. This is not going to activate the area. There's nothing in there that's going to bring life to that area. We've seen in the South Bank structure plan, the Arts Precinct plan, that activation is absolutely critical down there. The setbacks are only 5.5 metres, I believe, yet there's a 10-metre requirement. Once again, the council officers have said that they would recommend a 1-metre increase in that to, 6.5? Let's not look at C270. This is being considered under the planning scheme at the time it was presented. It is 10 metres. 10 metres is what it is. We've still got other surrounding blocks that need to be developed, and we need to consider the setback from those when they come up. The precedent that this will set in that area will absolutely destroy South Bank Village. If this is approved by the Minister, this will be a very sad day for South Bank Village. In fact, I think we could almost say this will be goodbye to the village as we know it. It will be finished. We've already got the Guild at 152 Sturt Street, which is already being used as a precedence to an argument of higher development in the area. This one will cement that. It will be finished. We trust that the councillors also see it the way the residents do. We know that the minister will make the final decision, but we certainly hope that this council will send a very strong message to the minister as to what needs to happen with this development.
Are you done, Tony?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for that.
It does say 3 storeys, doesn't it?
We'll come to that in a moment, don't worry. So I call on a councillor to move a motion. Thank you.
Chair, can I move the motion in the terms that they appear in the recommendation on the screen? Thank you.
And I call for a councillor to second the motion, Lord Mayor. Would the mover like to speak to the motion?
I would. Thank you very much, Chair. To begin with, can I just remind everyone who's made a submission that we can't reject the application here. We're writing a letter to the department, well, essentially to the minister eventually. The minister's the decision maker here, and we're providing advice. I'm moving this motion because I believe we should be advising the minister that he should reject the application, but we cannot reject the application ourselves here and now. This has been... let me also deal with the other matter raised in the final submission as well. All applications, particularly those of note, undergo extensive internal referrals. Big applications like this of architectural significance always go to our urban design offices for comment. One of those officers has suggested that it would be suitable to reduce the application by 3 storeys. The delegate looking at this application has considered that advice and, on balance, considering all matters, has said that no, the wise thing to do would be to reject the application outright. That is why the report says, from one officer in the internal referral section, reduce the height by 3 storeys, but the conclusion and the recommendation is that the whole matter be rejected. There should be inconsistencies in reports like this, but the only thing that matters is the final conclusion. I think it helps tease out the matters that we've got those opinions reflected in the report. It's better that we have them than we don't have them. So that's where that comes from. The application was made in June 2015. Obviously, that was because the change of rules on the 4th of September 2015 and subsequently has meant that it's in the interest of the developer to keep the application live with the pre-September 2015 controls. The developer is able to do that. It means that the local community has been unclear as to what's going on, and that's very understandable, but that is what's been happening there. I think that the two main issues that we've got here, though, stem from the overarching issue, which is that the development is too big, and that's what our officers are saying to us, and I certainly agree with that. We did ask for mandatory height controls in this area, not discretionary height controls. We can't vote on that basis because the rules are what the rules are and they are discretionary controls. However, the 27 metre height extension above the discretionary control in the scheme is too much, And the second reason that flows on from that is that it is causing undue overshadowing of neighbouring properties in the public realm in contravention of our sunlight to public spaces clause. Vitamin D deficiency per se is not a planning consideration, but yes, one of the reasons that we're asking the Minister to reject this is that the overshadowing concerns are too great. So those concerns are definitely going to be taken into consideration. There are no third-party objection notice or appeal rights here, and yet because of largely, I think, the excellent work of Eileen and others, a lot of people know about this application. It's been subject of local press as well. 58 objections plus seems like many, many scores more over the last few days directly to this committee. They will, I think, most of them have been copied into the planner who's working on this at the department. So although they don't have any formal status, those objections, I'm sure the planner at the department also will be considering them as well. So thank you for making sure that your concerns are well understood by councillors, and they certainly have been. Finally, I just want to say that the... I think I've covered that all. I might leave it there. I recommend to my fellow councillors that we reject this based on its lack of compliance with the planning scheme. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Lord Mayor, did you wish to speak to the motion?
Thank you. This is a street I know very well. I travel along it coming to work on the number one tram, or I drive past it every single day. This development is an absolute shocker. It is inappropriate in every way for the streetscape of that street. Although, as has been pointed out by Councillor Leppard, we are not the responsible authority here. We are a referral authority, so we can only offer advice, and I'm hoping that we offer it in the strongest terms possible. I don't diminish the seriousness of the lack of sunlight, but I would counsel submitters that this is a difficult argument to make around shadowing. There are statutory measurements which can be complied with, and it doesn't necessarily accord with common sense, which is why the sunlight to open places policy is being developed at the moment. I would, before I finish, just echo a few things, though. I actually think that 40 metres is too high for this street. If you think 40 metres is the top of Manchester Unity, and that is not the streetscape of Sturt Street. But I think this may well be an impetus for us to urge the Minister to consider this, and a number of submitters talked about it as the Arts Precinct, and we certainly want it to be that because of the plethora of wonderful institutions that are down there. I'm not a fan of the public art, by the way, that's being done by Transurban in the middle of the street, but that's a different issue. But if the government is serious about this as an arts precinct, they need to think about it like they do about the sports precinct and the Melbourne Olympic Park Trust, and protecting the area for an arts precinct. And that would mean that 40 metres would be inappropriate. It's interesting, and the Guild building was mentioned, although it tried to provide ground level activation, that was a complete failure. And so we may now have to step into that gap to take that up for arts businesses to take up those leases in order for it to activate the street itself. So my, I guess my plea to the state government, I hope in the strongest terms, is going to be around, if you want to think about this as an arts precinct, then you need to step in now and you need to provide protections that will allow it to grow as an arts precinct. And we're going to get these opportunistic development proposals put before us unless we do that sort of protection. So my view of the world is that this is, to repeat what I said at the start, a complete shocker of a development. It breaches every aesthetic that we wish for Sturt Street, and I want to oppose it in the strongest possible terms.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any other councillors that wish to speak to this motion? Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very brief. I think Philip Arbuckle summed it up perfectly. It was a really well-made submission according to where this doesn't meet the planning scheme. Council Leppard reinforced that, but I think when you look at the bulk, when you look at the height, some decisions in planning are a little bit more difficult. This one is a very simple one, and we should be sending a strong message to the Minister to refuse it.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Are there any other councillors who wish to speak to it?
Thank
Councillor
you.
Watts.
Yes, I'm just a little confused, and just for the clarification for myself, and I presume the submitters, the 58 submissions will be going with our recommendation. No? So people should submit otherwise. Would you...
Councillor Lippard?
If an officer shakes their head at me, they can feel free to clarify what I'm about to say, but any objection that was also copied into the planner at the department will certainly have been seen by the planner at the department. But no, we would not be forwarding the submissions as a matter of course, and we don't actually have any precedent for that. But I'm sure the issues canvassed in the objections, and there have been 58 plus all of those that have been copied in, mean that the planner will well and truly understand the sentiment.
And presumably there's nothing to prevent residents from hitting the forward button on emails that they may have already sent to other parts of government. Okay, are there any other speakers for the motion? No? Well, I will now put the motion to...
Can I quickly close the debate, please, Chair?
You can, Councillor.
I'll be quick, Lord Mayor.
It's not on the script. Oh, Keith, it's not on the script.
Look, just briefly, obviously the Minister's now got a difficult decision. If he rejects the application on the same terms that we've advised him to, and it looks like it's going to be a unanimous vote, and that's fantastic, the Council's standing alongside the local community very strongly, then, of course, the Tribunal could revisit this issue. I think we have to be aware that there's a very decent chance that the Tribunal would permit the application with two or three or four stories taken off. 67 metres above 40 metres is not out of the realms of possibility when you consider other planning permits in South Bank. So with that ever so slight word of warning, and I'm sorry to end on a ever so slightly sour note, here and now I'm very happy it seems that the Council is going to be strongly supporting the rejection of this application, and let's hope that the Minister and Tribunal stick to that as well.
Okay, I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. Okay, name the Lord Mayor.
Declare it carried unanimously.
Oh, yes, I can declare it carried unanimously. That's easily done. I declare the motion carried unanimously. I'll now call on the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, to resume the role of Chair for the remainder of the meeting. Thank you.
This concludes the report.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of Old Melbourne Town. This matter refers to the travel of Councillor Cathy Oak to important climate conferences and meetings in Cancun, Mexico in December and in Bonn, Germany in January. I fully support management's recommendation that Councillor Oak travel to these important meetings. It's very important that Melbourne, as an international city, participates and is involved in these climate conferences. It's important too that Councillor Oak will have the opportunity to highlight all the great work that City of Melbourne staff and management are doing in regards to the Urban Forest Project. It's sort of like a project that I think invigorates and excites many people, and it sort of connects people with nature in a way that many cities around the world don't. So I'm sure with Councillor Oak presenting the Urban Forest Project to the conferences ahead that it will inspire many sort of municipalities to partake of such projects of great importance. I think too it's an important opportunity for City of Melbourne to further establish strong relations with the Royal Botanic Gardens, with the CSIRO, and also too I think to reach out to NASA with the scientific research that they do on planet Earth and, in fact, around the solar system as well. NASA reach out to sort of international partners and request that they have cooperation with international partners for their scientific research. So I think if we reach out to NASA as well to help further climate science study that will be a positive for the City of Melbourne, and it would show leadership in Australasia if we do reach out to NASA. It's important too that we protect the biodiversity of Melbourne. City of Melbourne, I believe, is like groundbreaking in many cities around the world in their approach to protecting the biodiversity. So again, it's important that Councillor Oak sort of relays that message that we're on board with what's going on there. This too fits hand in glove with the work that the Resilient Cities Network are doing around the world. And as we know, Melbourne is part of the Resilient Cities Network. So again, this is a plus for Councillor Oak to participate in all these meetings. So in conclusion, I fully support management's recommendation that Councillor Oak travels to these important meetings.
Thank you, Chris. Can I thank you for your ongoing support for these missions as well, very consistent across a number of years now. I'm happy to move item 7.1. Is there a seconder, Deputy Lord Mayor? Let me speak very briefly to it. Councillor Oak works remarkably hard for us when she travels to these conferences. I think she's now been to Copenhagen, Paris and Mexico for ICLEI. On the side, representing the City of Melbourne, she's a very respected voice and a very respected figure at these international conferences. She both takes the City of Melbourne narrative to these important world conferences, but also brings back the very latest in best city practice for us each time. And she has driven remarkable value for us in each of these attendances, and I'm delighted to support her representation of ICLEI and de facto us at COP 13. Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Absolutely happy to support this travel from Councillor Oak, heavily networked, subject matter expert, and has been in the environmental sector for a very, very long time. We heard from our submitter how important climate action is. City of Melbourne, in many respects, is leading, so we'll get the chance to tell our story. But the city-to-city exchange that's so important, not reinventing the wheel, is probably the best outcome of a lot of these international engagements. But we shouldn't also forget, I guess, that yes, this is about technical understanding, yes, this is about driving action, but this is also about international reputation and business. This positions the City of Melbourne as an innovative, forward-thinking city that's rising to the challenges that many cities around the world are rising to. So fully support Councillor Oak's travel.
Speaker against the motion? Is there a further speaker to the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you very much. This concludes the items of general business for consideration. Are there any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we provide a 15-minute period at the end of each meeting for questions to be asked. Can I just remind people, this is for questions. It's not for submissions. It is to ask us questions. Are there any questions for us? Gentleman at the front there. Could you tell us your name and then away we go?
Thanks, my name's Stan Capp, Lord Mayor. And
I know, Stan.
And greetings to you and Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. I have three questions. One is it possible to approve secondary consent when there is no valid planning permit? For example, 113 Little Lonsdale Street expired on the 4th of November with, as I understand, no application for renewal submitted, and on the 4th of November, on the 7th of November, our correction, a secondary consent actually was approved under delegation.
My second Stan, can I ask, and we'll halt the time so that you're not eating up time, could I ask our officers about that? Because that is a very technical question.
Sure.
Is it possible to approve secondary consent, as Stan asks? Jane? Yeah? Please.
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, no, it is not possible to grant a secondary consent on an expired permit. However, in the case that's being talked about, we have received information that works have commenced, we have seen photos, and we have a statement from a building surveyor that indicate that the permit has been acted upon and is therefore a valid approval, and therefore a secondary consent has been approved.
Thank you. Stan, thank you. Please continue. I hope you don't mind me interrupting you. We'll just get you answers along the way, if that's okay. Thank you.
Sorry. I'm delighted to get some clarification, because the extent of the substantial progress is three windowsills, which quite recently had bricks removed very carefully. I think if Council accepts that as substantial progress and active on the site, it really does bring into question the whole validity of this process.
Could I ask then that our officers follow that up and determine whether substantial progress has been made in those terms, Jane?
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors, the question is not one of whether substantial progress is made, it's a question of whether works have commenced under the planning permit, and the bar is not set particularly high. The works in terms of removing the windowsills and the internal works, although it's not a substantial amount of work, is considered to constitute commencement under that planning permit.
Is that challengeable by residents, for instance, or...?
Potentially. There could be an application seeking a declaration. There are a number of VCAT cases on this matter, and most conclude that you don't need to have undertaken a substantial amount of work for the permit to be considered acted upon.
But they could pursue that if
absolutely.
They wish.
Absolutely.
Thank
yes,
you, Jane.
That's certainly
thanks,
an option
Stan.
Available.
Please, go ahead.
I missed out on 10 seconds there.
We're all trying to help you here.
Second question, is it possible...
This is the third question.
The second question on my list, Lord Mayor, is it possible for the delegated officer to consult with residents, a right not given to us thus far?
I don't know the answer to that. What status does consultation with our officers have, Jane?
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillors, I just need to reiterate that this planning permit application is not subject to formal notification or appeal rights under the Capital City Zone. There's certainly been some correspondence from the residents of Regency Towers, and we're certainly aware of the issues that they've raised. These have been long-standing issues that have been raised through a number of planning permit applications, but there's no formal requirement for consultation.
But I presume that we could provide information and
yes, and
et cetera as required.
Yes, and we have had discussions to date.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you,
anybody else like to take part? Yeah.
The final question is really what you are doing as a council to enable better rights to residents. Having been encouraged to come to the CBD, we are somewhat bemused by our reputation as being Melbourne's or the world's most livable city, and yet we see time and time again instances where residents are excluded from that process. So subpart B of three is it possible that there could be developed a panel of independent residents to review planning applications in a way they become a citizen's jury and can recommend to council?
The answer to that is it's certainly possible around planning matters should we determine that's the case. And for instance, Alana McTiernan did that in Western Australia when she was the state planning minister. That would be a matter for council to determine around individual issues. The matter of third party rights is not ours to determine. And even when there are not, as you've seen tonight, third party appeal rights, we still hear them here because we get a voice and we take pride in referring that. That's not the same thing as the state government, as you know, giving those third-party appeal rights. We can advocate for them, citizens can, but in the end that's a matter for state government. Nevertheless, we always do listen and we do refer those things as part of our submission to state government as part of the process. Thank you, Stan. Further questions? Tony?
Two questions. One of them is just for clarification to try and get my head around the VCAT process and if there's been any development since the 250 Sturt Street. What we saw with 250 Sturt Street development was once again one that was rejected here that was then appealed. There was a VCAT compulsory conference. My question is, and then it was there's a development approved now. My question is there a possibility that if the minister intends on rejecting this 135 Sturt Street development, that it could go to a compulsory conference and we get something that we didn't want?
Rather hypothetical series of ifs. I might ask our planners that. I think the answer is it's possible.
I'm leaving it on.
I hesitate to say anything is not possible at VCAT. Jane?
Lord Mayor, and I think that probably is the right answer. Certainly the applicant if the Minister did refuse his application, could take the matter to the tribunal. Council could apply to be involved as a party to the matter as well. We're not automatically included because it's not a formal referral. It would depend on whether or not the proposal substantially changed, and there potentially would be an opportunity to bring an amended position back to the council for consideration. But it depends entirely on what the applicant intends to do.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
My second question was in regard to third-party notice rights. Yes, we all know that we don't have them here in the City of Melbourne, but is there any possibility that this council...
You don't? No, no, it's not that you don't have them at the City of Melbourne.
Oh, sorry, Capital City Zone.
The state government makes a determination about who has third-party appeal rights, not
us. You're right. No, you're right. Capital City Zone. Is there a possibility, even though the state government doesn't allow that, that this council can say, you know what, we're going to give our Capital City Zone residents notice rights, and we're going to tell them when we get an application that comes to us because we disagree with what the state government policy is. Is that possible?
Look, that would be an internal discussion that we had. The difficulty with it is it's difficult to raise, and one thing I revile is local government politicking, which raises the expectation of residents that something can be done, and there's a whole lot of froth and bubble when the reality is it will eventually go nowhere because there are no such rights and the state government has no intention of recognising them. And so I think there's good intentions versus reality to be balanced there. But I think that would be a matter that we would have to discuss. I mean, the worst thing would be if we had a number of people who in good faith came here, and you can explain to people all you like, look, you realise this has no standing, but they will still bring their passion and their hearts to the argument, and at the end of it, in good faith, can I say to them, that's great and I've listened to you and I actually agree with you, but there's nothing I can do about it now? I feel a bit difficult about that, Tony, but as I say, that would need a discussion between all of us.
I suppose at least they know that they can at least lobby the minister because they know that there's something that's happening.
But the best thing to do surely is to lobby the minister directly. Not to have, to be honest, an impotent discussion.
Precisely, but it's better than the next day you see a crane come in and start knocking over the building next door because you didn't even know it was going to happen.
Well,
you've missed your opportunity to lobby the minister.
It's not a matter for submission, as you know. Are there any further questions for us? Maureen? Yep, of course. Next. Yep.
Follow on from that gentleman.
Can I just make one point?
Yep.
If these discussions stray into submission,
no, it's
we,
not.
We will move away from them.
That's okay.
They are for questions.
It's not.
Yep.
It's about third rights. We used to, I suppose, in my day, in the olden days, we actually used, residents did have rights, and the government at the time took it away from Melbourne City Council because they felt that they were...
You need to ask us a question.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. So that...
No, but you need to ask us a question.
Can you get those rights back? If you had them once, can council then negotiate with the state government to get some rights back?
We ask regularly. We've been rebuffed regularly.
Okay. So is there anything that we can do about it?
You can ask too.
We have.
How have you gone?
Not well.
Welcome to the club.
But I think we need to have more because I think it needs to be
No, but it's
fair.
Not a matter... This is not a time for submissions.
All right.
It's a time for questions. But thank you. Gentlemen,
okay.
Here. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, of course.
But you
of
could
course.
Have the discussion about it yeah. and approach...
Yeah. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. Let me just add to that briefly. I think there are 6 or 7 schedules to the Capital City Zone at the moment, and they are variable as local planning provisions on application by the council as a planning scheme amendment to the minister. But the Lord Mayor is quite right. The minister would need to decide whether or not to allow that proposal for a change to the schedule, so to reallow third-party rights. And it's a moot question as to whether or not he would do that because this council has never had a majority vote to seek that happening. It is technically possible, but the reason I'm adding to the debate just here, it's not a debate, I beg your pardon, is that the planning minister has just undergone an extensive Central City built form review and has made it very clear that the reinstatement of third-party rights is not something that he wishes to canvass. It's a matter that different councillors will have very different opinions on, and we certainly did have the debate in the previous council, but we have just had the Central City built form review and the minister's made it quite clear that he's not looking at this issue again. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
And that decision will come out within the next few days, I would have thought.
Thank you.
Hi, Con Angelatus. I live at Regency Towers as well, and obviously I'm disappointed to hear that you've accepted the proposal for the application. But one of the things that...
but that's not the case. My understanding is that was a matter that was in court and it will now be made by delegated authority.
That's fine. One of the things that I'd like to ask the planning people question is, can they add a special condition to the applications permit that Brady, the developer, actually produces the treatments to the outside of the building that he actually has in the plan based on history and the need for VCAT to establish a special condition in a previous case that he conforms to the, and in this site I'm talking about, that he conforms to the treatment on the outer part of the building as per his plan, which he had promised to do.
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillors. The recommended conditions, part of Condition 1A, which requires amended plans, requires some changes to the materials. Condition 7 also requires that a full schedule and samples of all materials, colours and finishes be submitted to Council satisfaction. They're also required to comply with those, together with their broader endorsed plans. Should they not, then Council has the ability to take enforcement action.
Can you explain to our questioner what will be our surveillance regime to ensure compliance?
To ensure compliance? Well, certainly we're developing a proactive compliance regime whereby we ensure that material that is required to be submitted prior to works commencing for this permit actually happens, so writing to developers and ensuring that this material is submitted. And then certainly for certain sites, we can undertake a proactive enforcement inspection process.
Thank you.
For sites that we think perhaps should be on our radar.
Thank you. And I take it that if there is a complaint from a member of the public that the facade is not compliant, we would follow up with that as well.
Absolutely. Council officers can't be everywhere, and we do rely on the public to draw these things to our attention as well.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's just a second question
of course
to that. In relation to that treatment, in the past, the building has actually been specified and built without the room to add the treatment. So that I just wondered, had this plan been looked at to ensure that there's actually an ability to add the treatment without encroaching on other properties?
I think that is possible as well. Is that not our municipal building surveyor who would look at that to make... Okay, so our municipal building surveyor, a statutory officer of the City of Melbourne, can actually ensure that the building is compliance ready, as it were. Thank you. In that case, can I thank members of the public for their interest and attendance, and also staff for their tremendous interest and attendance, and declare the meeting closed at 6:40 p.m.